Hawaii is vulnerable on a number of fronts, and this week we've been looking at our different areas of vulnerability. As summer approaches, we can expect a rash of wildfires, and as we have seen recently in California, they can all too easily rage out of control. Claytronic specializes in wildlife fire science and management at the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture. He studies how they can be managed, how their frequency relates to climate change, and even social change. He's with us in our studio. Hi, Clay. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Chris, for having me. Appreciate it.
Can we expect a summer wildfire season the way we usually do in the summertime here?
Well, sort of the near-term projections look like we're going to have our typical dry summer conditions that we're used to. And one of the big kind of drivers from the season before is how wet it's been. And we all kind of know that it's been pretty wet and green out there. Mm-hmm. And so for fire risk, that kind of translates to increasing the amount of fuels, especially all the non-native grasses that are out on the landscape. And so we probably will expect sort of a normal summer, and that our summertime is kind of the time of year we're more likely to get these large wildfires.
But a normal summer involves too many wildfires, right?
Well, yeah, the sort of drivers of wildfire have been changing in the state. So we have been seeing an increase in the area burned statewide over the past several decades in Hawaii. It's actually, we're lucky in that the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Division of Forestry and Wildlife, has a pretty long fire history for Hawaii. So we can actually look going back to about 1904, and the past several decades have seen a pretty big increase, about a fourfold increase in the area burned per year on average.
To what do you attribute that?
It's complicated, right? I mean, it's actually it's hard to attribute it directly to any one cause, but the biggest change that Hawaii's seen, and I think a lot of listeners will be familiar with this, is the decline in agricultural production across the state. So we see, you know, plantation agriculture kind of on its way out. So the last one just most recently on Maui, ranching, for example, cattle herding is also declined. And when those industries are no longer being practiced, the change that we see is an increase in these unmanaged non-native grasslands. So these grasses kind of fill in that space that once was agriculture. And what that does is it basically primes the landscape to burn.
So that's the fuel.
That's the fuel, and these kinds of grass species burn very readily where they're from, Africa mostly. They're completely adapted for burning. And what that does is sort of two things. It increases the risk around our communities, you know, so we're seeing an increase in fire risk around the homes in areas that might not have been so threatened before. And it also increases the risk of fire damage to the forests in our on our mountains, that are key to provisioning water and sort of controlling erosion and sediment delivery to the reefs. So it increases the threat of fire kind of across the landscape.
What starts these fires?
So almost all fires are started by people. Lightning strikes are relatively rare in Hawaii, although we do get here and there a lightning strike will start a fire, but it's much more rare to have lightning events, at least dry lightning, than it is on the mainland. Just given the kind of climate we have, that we don't get that big heating effect where you get these giant, you know, cumulus clouds.
The conditions for lightning.
So the conditions for lightning are, it's not as frequent as on the mainland. And so almost all of our fires are started by people. And as one of my kind of, I'd say, mentors of the County Fire Department used to say, it's just really due to reckless behavior. So whether it's intentional or accidental, it's often difficult to identify, but it's nearly all fires are started by people here.
If you have a home near one of these sort of, you described them almost as like an African savanna.
Exactly.
A big field with lots of non-native species, fuel for a wildfire.
Exactly, yeah.
If you live near one, what should you do?
Okay, that's a great question. The big thing for sort of protecting your home, for example, from fire is to allow safe access and safe conditions for firefighters. And the recommendation there is pretty much look at your house and keep all of your grass and brush trimmed to a space around 50 feet around your property. And so that means kind of keeping trees away from the structures themselves, but also keeping the grass trimmed back to the property edge. And so in the event of a fire, and especially for areas like on the leeward sides of the islands where these are much more frequent, you're essentially creating what they call defensible space. And this is just an area around the house that firefighters can get in. They can reach the areas that may be burning where the fire is approaching from and work safely around your home.
No way to, and we do hear about arson in the summer as a cause of,
yes,
of wildfires. Is there any way to tell how many of those fires are deliberately set?
So fire investigation in the sense of trying to attribute a cause is quite difficult. It's just a tricky process. And typically, unless there's a sort of clear asset that's been damaged and you want to attribute risk, many of these fires, we just don't have the resources to investigate the cause, even if we could determine exactly what caused them. But it is pretty, I would say there's a bunch of stories that we are pretty confident we can attribute some of these fires to arson. So when you see a string of fires lit up on Mamalohoa Highway, for example, on the Big Island, that's, you know, pretty indicative that it's a person lighting a bunch of fires along the road.
You know, it's very far from being a harmless prank, isn't it? I mean, it not only does it tie up resources that might be used elsewhere, but it's risky fighting a wildfire, isn't it?
Yeah, it's risky and very expensive. And when you look at sort of some of these larger events that have happened in the state, you're talking of upwards of $500,000 or more just to suppress the fire. That doesn't take into account the damage caused by the fire.
Mm-hmm.
On the sort of home household side, of course, when you lose structures, that's an easy equation to sort of figure out the damage. But on the sort of Malka side or the mountain forest assets, things like that, it gets a little bit more difficult to, I guess, ascertain, you know, what's the value of an acre of native forest, for example, when it does burn. We can look at it from the cost of restoring that forest, which is pretty expensive as well. But colleagues and myself at the University of Hawaii are trying to get a better sense for how you can quantify those impacts. But it's difficult anywhere. It's difficult.
People can make a difference just by being less careless when they're out there in dry conditions, right?
Yeah, so the use of machinery limiting things like weed whackers when it's hot, dry, windy conditions that we get in the summer, and you know you're working in these areas where it's lots of these grassy fuels, limiting the use of machinery, not pulling over and parking in tall grass. You know, fires can get started from the catalytic converters on your car.
Just from a spark.
From a spark, yep. So it's pretty, there's some pretty straightforward ways that you can reduce that risk and reduce ignition probability, the chances.
Thanks very much for filling us in.
Yeah, no problem.
Clay Tarnick is an assistant specialist in wildlife fire science and management with the University of Hawaii's College of Tropical Agriculture. He's currently leads the Pacific Fire Exchange, a fire science communication project.